Good morning. I forgot to turn on the recorder Sunday, so I'm reteaching this in my office. It will probably be shorter than what I preached in the pulpit, so you can count your blessings for that. We're in Genesis chapter 4 and verses 1 through 15, and able-bodied murder, and the sermon was preached on January the 11th, 2026. So where we start out here is in verses 1 to 5 of Genesis chapter 4. And I want to show you that these are not teenagers. They're not young men. They're old enough to know better. So chapter 4, verse 1. The man knew Eve, his woman, and she became pregnant. It's the common word, not for conception, but for becoming pregnant, and very used many times, whereas conception is used very rarely, three times in this narrative, in this area, but most of the time it's the term for she became pregnant. And she gave birth to Cain. Cain means to acquire, and she said, "I have been caused to acquire a man through the Lord." So this is her firstborn, we think, although Adam and Eve had many sons and daughters. The ones that are named here, Cain would be, in Eve's thinking, the answer to the promise given in Genesis 3:16 about the seed of the woman. Once again, there was, verse 2, the giving birth to his brother Abel. So something transpired between verses 1 and 2 that when she gave birth to Cain, she said, "I acquired a man through the Lord." But by the time she gets to Avel, the word means nothingness or vanity. There's a loss of hope. There's a loss of realization. I think Cain was old enough at this point that she realized the wheels were falling off, and raising children, giving birth to children, is indeed giving birth to trouble. And Cain is trouble with a capital T. Abel, verse 2, was a shepherding sheep. And Cain was laboring, working, serving the soil. Now, verse 3, it was after some point of time of days, Cain caused to be brought from the fruit of the earth, or from the fruit of the dirt, a gift, an offering to the Lord. Now, notice here that it doesn't say that he brought the first fruits. He didn't bring the first fruits. He brought an offering. Most people want to try to make the problem what he brought versus Cain himself being the problem. But a fruit offering certainly would have been okay, would have been accepted. There's nothing wrong with the offering per se. But the problem is that Cain is an evil, nasty person, and he's doing this not out of faith, but out of obligation. And so he finds some old batch of stuff that he gives to Jesus. I think these are pre-incarnate appearances of Christ. Verse 4, you see the contrast. And Abel caused to be brought also. He caused to be brought from the firstborn of his flock, from the fat of them. So he went and found the very best of his flock of sheep, and brought the best of it. That's from the fat of them, not some scraggly, limpid, nasty, "We don't want to keep this animal and have it reproduce, but man, this is a keeper. This is the one he brought for his sacrifice." And so he brought an offering just like Cain did, but this offering, the Lord had favor to Abel and to his gift, verse 5. And to Cain and to his gift, he did not accept. So Christ wouldn't accept Cain's offering, but he did accept Abel. And there was an enragement to Cain, just a huge amount. He became incensed. He was very, very, very angry. You know, you would think that he would be more careful in the presence of Christ. He wasn't. He didn't like Jesus. He didn't like the world. He didn't like his parents. He was an evil person. And his face fell. So Christ is actually calling him in for his failure to do what he should be doing, which is by faith living a life that's honoring to the Lord. Instead, like a teacher who corrects a student, the student becomes enraged. And the Lord said to Cain, "Why is there enragement for you? Why has your face fallen?" The question here is put to him as a question. He doesn't answer it. He doesn't wish to engage Christ. He likes his sin. He likes his anger. And he has every right in his world to be completely fed up with God and God's system. But I want you to see here that these are men who've made choices, and we can see from Hebrews 11, verse 4, that by faith Abel offered his sacrifice, and passages like 1 John 3:12 and 15, which I won't take the time to turn there, although I did during the sermon. 1 John 3:12 and 15 says, you know, his works were evil. He was of the evil one. Jude 11, the way of Cain is this self-aggrandizing refusal to follow the Lord's leadership. So Cain here and Abel are not adolescent boys. They're men. They probably are married and have families. We don't know that for sure. But we do know that Cain, when he left, he took his wife with him. So it's a situation that we have to look at. These are old enough to know better. And Cain is absolutely making his choice not to have any desire to be involved with Christ. In verses 6 and 7, what we'll see is that there's plenty of energy when it comes to evil. Verse 6, "And the Lord said to Cain, why is there anger and enragement for you? Why has your face fallen? Will not there be for you if you cause good to be done? There'll be acceptance or forgiveness. Could be honor or elevation." In other words, if he does what he should be doing, which is by faith bringing to the Lord a sacrifice that's appropriate for forgiveness of sins, for honoring the Lord, won't you be accepted? There will be acceptance and forgiveness, elevation. You're rejected now because you're a dirty, rotten scoundrel. But if you change this, then it'll go a different direction. And if not, if you do not cause good to be done, so if you're going to continue to behave and believe what you do, then sin is crouching. It's ready for action. It's lurking. It's ready for action at the doorway. It's just right outside your tent. It's ready to leap and pounce on you. I remember hunting during 2020. In Oklahoma, and I looked across the meadow in the middle of the night, and I must have been snoring, but because I thought this big white animal was actually my neighbor's lab. But it turns out it was a mountain lion, and the mountain lion made a sharp left turn and started coming right towards me, prowling right towards me. And all of a sudden I realized that animal is coming after me. So I was about 10 feet up in a deer stand, maybe 12 on a good day. And so I stood up and took the safety off my rifle, and as soon as I flashed on my light, I saw his nice round face and little ears and long tail, and he darted to the left, and I never got a shot off, but he had second thoughts when I was standing up on a 10-foot platform with a gun. But the wild animal here lurking with lots of energy, and its desire, its strong, long, very strong urges, same terminology as chapter 3, verse 16, where your strong desire will be to your husband and he will rule over you. He'll be the king over you. Here, same thing. It's the same structure. Sin is lurching, crouching at the doorway, and its strong desire is for you, and you are to rule over it. So in verses 6 and 7, we find out that there's a choice that Cain has to make. Either believe and start to walk with the Lord, or sin is going to absolutely gain mastery over him. I think sin here is personified, that although we don't have any mention of Satan or the devil until really the prophets, we do have mention of demons in Leviticus, but we all know that there's a power and a person behind the personification of sin. And we know that our enemy is a murderer and a liar from the beginning, according to John 8:44. And certainly we see that where we have the first recorded homicide in verses 8 and 9. And Cain talked to Abel, his brother. And it came to pass, or it was when they were in the field, Cain got up or rose up. It just means he apparently they were sitting and talking in the field. And he rose up to Abel, his brother, and he killed him. He slew him. So in verse 8, this homicide, it's real interesting to me that the text does not say that he murdered his brother. It's simply that he slew him or killed him. There, ratzach is the Hebrew word for murder. It's the commandment in Exodus 20:13, thou shalt not murder. It's not thou shalt not kill. Ratzach is never used of capital punishment. It's never used of military killing. It's consistently used for murder. But for whatever reasons, that's not the term that's used here. Harag is a different term, and it just means to kill. So I don't know why this isn't considered murder. It may be that we don't have the whole story on this, that maybe they had already been wrestling and fighting and having physical altercations that preceded all this. It's not stated. That wouldn't surprise me that these brothers increasingly became at odds with one another. What the physical contacts were before, and I just don't know. There's no way of knowing. But we should note that it's called he killed him, not he murdered him. So I'm saying this is the first recorded homicide. And in verse 9, you have the Lord saying to Cain, the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? And he said, I don't know. So you have a murder and a lie right here. No surprise about that. The one behind this and prompting him. I don't know where he is. Well, he did know where he was because he killed him and buried the body or did something with the body. And then he says, am I emphatic? Am I the one keeping or guarding my brother? Is it my job to take care of him? I don't know where he is. So you have the first homicide and the lie about what he'd done. And in verses 10, 11, and 12, you have the consequences of this. Let's look at verse 10 together. And then this is the Lord speaking. And he said, "What have you done? The sound of the blood of your brother is crying out to me from the ground." So in verse 10, you have the introduction of what is called the law of blood guiltiness, that the ground cries out for justice. I remember listening to a rabbi who was a police chaplain, and he was lecturing on this in Portland, Oregon. And he was absolutely spot on with the way the Old Testament rolls this issue out, that because humans are created in God's image, when their blood is wrongfully spilt, the ground itself requires justice. And as we'll see in Genesis 9, the only proper justice is that the death of the murderer should be had. They have to execute or kill the one who's committed the wrong homicide, and that sets the blood guiltiness issue, cancels it out. So this is the first reference. Now the question is, you know, why did Christ not kill Cain for his crime? And we're not given any answers to that, although I guess I'm glad in one sense that Christ didn't personally kill him, because it would leave Eve and Adam to execute Cain, because they would be the blood avengers, so they'd have to kill their son. Or Christ would do it, and if he personally killed all the ones who murdered, or all the ones who understand murder, or all the ones who ever wished somebody else were dead, or hated anybody else, none of us would be alive, and Christ wouldn't be able to do anything else but spend his time executing murderers. So he doesn't do that. It's also possible that rather than execute Cain, or have Adam and Eve execute Cain, or the family of Abel avenge his blood, which would have set off the Hatfield and McCoys, the one killing this one and the other one killing that one, he banishes him. He curses the ground, verse 11, the consequences of this, and banishes him. Let's look at verse 11. "Now you also are being cursed from the ground." So you violated your brother's life, and the ground drank his blood, and now you are going to be cursed from the ground, which opened its mouth to take the blood of your brother from your hand. So you did the wrong thing, and now it's cursed. Verse 12, "Because whenever you serve or work the ground, it will not be caused to increase, to give the strength of it to you." And then he has a term here, a nomad, meaning movies, he's going to move all the time, and a wanderer you will be in the earth. So the consequences are laid out in verses 10, 11, and 12. And then in verses 13, 14, and 15, we find that Cain feels like the punishment is too great, that he probably felt like Abel deserved it and so forth. But you see in verse 13 his appeal, "And Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than understood, my ability to lift it or support or endure under it. Since you are banishing me, driving me out." Now nothing is said by Christ about the banishment. So it must be additional information that came here, that it wasn't going to be possible for him to stay in the land of Eden. They'd already been driven out of the garden. Same turn as 3:24, where they were driven out, banished from the garden, that amazing walled garden of Eden, you know, 7 to 10,000 acre garden with a road to it and the tree in the midst. But this, now he's being driven today from the face or the surface of the ground. So most likely the reference here is to the region he has been serving, the plot of ground where Abel's blood was absorbed. Now he's going to be driven away from that. So you are banishing me, and it's second masculine singer. So Christ is banishing him from the ground, and from your face I will be unknown. It could be hidden, concealed. So he's not gonna see Christ anymore, according to this. Now the question is, could Cain have found repentance and faith? Well, it seems to me, yes, he could. However, there's no interest or desire on Cain's part to be continue in this relationship. He wants nothing to do with Christ, and the proof of that is that he's killed his brother. So he says, and I will be unknown or concealed or hidden from your face. Also verse 14, and I will be a nomad and a wanderer in the earth. So those, he adds some things here that must have been explained in the process of the judgment. And it will be everyone finding me, or all the ones finding me, will kill me. So his concern is that he'll be out of the land of Eden, and when that happens, somebody is going to avenge his blood. Verse 15, and the Lord said to him, therefore, all the ones killing Cain, sevenfold upon them, understood, it will be avenged. So he sets a parameter here that no one can kill Cain. Again, there's a lot of things we don't understand about why he did it this way. And again, the purpose of Genesis is to give to a redeemed people information and not necessarily answer all our questions. But God says Cain would be avenged sevenfold if somebody harms him. And the Lord put for Cain a sign. The term sign here is used frequently for a banner. It's a recognizable banner for the prevention of the causing of physical blows to him for all the ones finding him. So there's something he gave to him or did to him that made it recognizable that he had already been dealt with by the Lord, and no further punishment or blows could come to him. And if you did, then there would be a sevenfold judgment of whatever you do to Cain is going to happen to you seven times over. So it's probably a figure of speech. You find sevens all through this passage of Scripture. But the protection was provided for Cain, and you know, the commentaries and rabbis are all over the place as to what this sign was, this banner was, and we'll never answer that question. But what I'd like you to take away from this passage of Scripture is that the goal for us is to believe and do righteous acts through God's power, that we do the right thing because we love the Lord and He gives us the power to do, like Abel, and not to yield to sin because it's dynamic and it's dangerous. When I was in high school, there were three of us Christian young men, maybe four of us, I can't remember, that banded together to walk with the Lord all through our high school years. And we actually did, and the coach at our school is the one who put us up to this. He said he'd buy us a steak dinner if we walked with the Lord through high school. And so we set our mind to collect the steak dinner, and also because we wanted to walk with the Lord. And I was part of a very large youth group. There was a couple hundred kids in our church's youth group. And there were three girls in that group that started messing with the Ouija board. Now, today we have all kinds of things that are games and probably 10 times worse than the Ouija board. But the three of us boys, you know, we knew enough at that point that they shouldn't be doing it. So unceremoniously, we went and told them, you three need to leave this alone. It's going to ruin your lives. And they didn't listen to us. No surprise there. Which teenage boy has the ability to communicate wisely. But, you know, and as time went on, all three of those girls absolutely crashed and burned. Their lives were total ruin. And, you know, not knowing any of the details, we took it back to them playing with the Ouija board. So sin is dynamic and dangerous, and you ought not to have anything to do with it. All right, so this ends our study in Genesis 4, 1 through 15, an able-bodied murder. And I look forward to sharing with you the next passage in Genesis 4. God bless you. Bye-bye.